Hey, guys, just want to let you know about some dates, September 16th through the 18th. I've been saying the wrong date, apparently, but it's September 16th through the 18th. I'm in Phoenix. October 28th, I'm headlining the Brea Improv. You can catch me out on the road with Segura. Tommy's taking me out. We're going to do some dates together. I know we're doing like a Vegas weekend in October. There's a California run in like January, and just go check as a Midwest. There's Ohio. There's West Virginia. Just check it all out. All right. This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV, Ritual, Go Henry, and Truff. More on that later. Let's get into the Dew.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social medias. Look, I want to continue to say thank you for your support. In under a year, we grew over 100,000 subscribers. So thank you. Please continue to subscribe. Just, it means nothing to you. Everything to me. Hit the subscribe, get the numbers up. It's a free, easy way to help. And then you'll get a reminder that you get audio on Monday, video on Tuesday. All right. HoneydewPodcast.com is the website. Go get your merch. Everything's restocked. It's all there for you. All right. Now, if you're new to the show, you know what we do over here. We highlight the lowlights. These are the stories behind the storytellers. Very excited to have this guest on. First time here on the Dew. Had a great Crab Feast episode as well. So go back and listen to that. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Paul Verzi, y'all. Welcome to the Honeydew.
What's up,
Paul.
Dude? So great to be here with you, buddy.
Finally.
Yes.
I know. We've been trying to do this.
You know what? Like, being from New York, you come out to LA and you're like, What podcast, you know, like, because now it's like what podcast you're going to do, right? It used to be like, I got to do a set, you know, yeah. Now it's like, no, man, like, and I was telling you before we got on here, I want to do podcasts of dudes that I love, guys that I met that I clicked with instantly. And when we met in Arizona, we were cool. We kind of, you know, stayed in contact and everything. And so I'm happy to be on it. Happy for your show growing, man.
Thank you, brother.
This was one that I was like, oh, I'm going to hang out with Sick, man. So,
well, you're right, too, because I just worked with Segura a little while ago. And they were like, what credits do you want when you go up? I was like, you know what? Say you've seen him on Your Mom's House podcast, the Joe Rogan podcast, and he hosts the Honeydew podcast.
Yeah.
And I thought to Tom, because Tom and I, you know, years ago we did Bray, and I was like, we would say back then you'd be like, whatever the fucking credit was, HBO, yeah. Comedy Central, whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
But it was all TV and bullshit. And now it's all, I was like, I purposely want just, and you could hear the applause of people with the podcast.
Yeah.
But when they used to say, you seen them on Comedy Central, or once, I'm like, yeah, I saw that shit. You know what I mean? Nobody.
No, no.
Nobody.
No, and it's funny. Like, I was just in Tampa, and I heard an intro that you had in L.A. here. It might have been that show we were talking about. Yeah, I heard, like, when they said you're – when they say the podcast, and I was just in Tampa, and they were like, oh, Verzi Effect and Anything Better. And you just start, and you're like, oh, shit, like, they don't care about Comedy Central or Netflix or Hulu. Like, it's like, oh, that's nice, but they're like, where can I hear? Because this shit is taking over radio.
And journalism. I'm now teaching.
As it should.
Yes, as it should. I am now teaching through Lana's nonprofit. I teach Culver City High School kids every Wednesday a podcasting class. We created a curriculum. We teach them. Nice. We've given them two episodes. We had the mayor of Culver City come in. We had the chief of police of Culver City come in. I teach six kids. We created a whole show for them. And we're submitting it to the school as new curriculum and get rid of journalism. Y'all just out there writing lies anyway.
Fake news.
You could why write it when you could say it?
Yeah. No, that's actually – I didn't even think of that. That's probably – you're bringing up future podcasters of the world, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually – it should be actually because this is radio in a different form. This is like –
radio and TV in a different
form. This is radio and TV in a different form, and it's taken on because people want to see this because it's real shit.
So before we get into what we're going to get into with you, please plug and promote everything and anything you'd like.
So,
all of it.
Guys, I got two podcasts right now, the Verzi Effect podcast, which this is kind of the Verzi Effect 2.0, because before it was just like audio, like, you know, it was just like talking to the fans that came out to the show. But through everything that happened in the pandemic, we got a studio now, my producer, Andrew Themlis. So check out the Verzi Effect. Bill Burr and I co-host a new podcast right now called Anything Better, which, yeah, we bullshit about sports and stuff, but it's everything. It's life. And we have such a good time. People are loving the rapport that me and Bill have. My YouTube channel, you could go to paulverzi.com for upcoming shows. Speaking of that, July, if you're in the Connecticut area, July 23rd, I'm going to be at the Fairfield Community Center Theater. I think that's the name of it, but just go to paulverzi.com. I'll be in Fairfield, Connecticut, a great theater, actually, on July 23rd, doing my first theater gig October 22nd at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. And there's going to be a lot of shows leading up to September, because I will be shooting my first special.
Yeah.
My second special.
I was going to say, go check his first special
first,
out. Yeah,
first special, man, really went viral. We have over 10 million views online during the pandemic. I'll say this, which is on Comedy Central, doing my second, I should say, yeah, after pandemic, I felt like everything was reset. I'm just saying first for everything, but second special. And my good buddy, Pete Davidson, who you all know from SNL, you know, movies, stand-up, Pete Davidson is going to be making his directorial debut on my special. He, you know, we've been friends for a long time. He saw chunks of the material and was like, dude, I want to be a part of this. So that's going to be going down in, looks like the middle of September. There's going to be a ton of dates before that. So just for all ticket links are available, paulverzi.com. Like I said, clips of the Verzi Effect and stand up on my YouTube. Go to Anything Better, has its own YouTube channel, and just check all the stuff, man. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to tell a story a little differently today. So you actually went through some serious depression.
Bad.
A couple of times.
Yes. It's
hit
me a couple of times.
So you said, I believe, the first time you were in college, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about that. How old were you? What year is this? And where are you in college?
All right. So I'll tell you how it led up. So I was living in a different area before high school. I was living in Lower Westchester. It was a smaller school. I had friends. I was playing sports. They were grooming me to play football a lot. They were, you know, it was just like a smaller community. Things are going good. And then boom, my mom and stepfather hit me with, we want to buy a house. We had like the second level of someone else's house. Mm-hmm. We want to move on with our life, and we got to move like an hour, like upstate. And
you're how old?
I'm like going into eighth grade, man. I'm not even kidding, like senior fifth, middle school, sixth, seventh. I was the shit. So I was, you know, like me and my friend, we were like hanging out with girls, and the first time you like saw a vagina, we rode our bikes home like animals. Like, can you believe that? That's what it looks like. You know, like we were like the shit, dude. You know what I mean? We were the shit. And oh, we're gonna be playing football. And then I remember being in like seventh grade, and they wanted me to become the quarterback in eighth grade. So like the last quarter of the season, they put me in. I had like two plays for like 20 yards and everything. And then like I kept saying like, Mom, we can't move. We're gonna move. And we went up to a school that was big, and it was like upstate. The school system wasn't that good, but my parents got a nice like ranch house up there. And I realized, to get popular, and since it was so big and it was the country, there was a lot of drinking and a lot of partying and being at the parties and who's going to do a keg stand and all that shit. And who's going to smoke the weed? That was what the cool kids did. So I didn't want to play sports with those kids, because my guys were the guys that I came up with young through grade school and now going into junior high. And now all of a sudden it's this big school, kids I don't know. And so I started to party. And I started to hang out with older kids. So like the older kids were like, no, man, you're cool. Like they took me under their wing, but it was like parties and weed. And so it was like girls and drinking. And I just got into that, and I became a bad student, you know, and I was really distracted, but I was smart. Like I remember one time my English teacher, every like, I don't know, Friday, we'd write an essay. And she called me out of the class afterwards, and she goes, Why are you in here? Why are you in the lower English? And I go, she goes, these essays are fantastic. And why are you? And she called me out of class, and I never forget. She said, shout out to Miss Scora, man. She's really changed things for me. And she goes, I'm going to put you in the higher class, but don't make me a fool. And I went from a C student in the low class to a B+ student in the higher class, because she just, but like, I was just distracted. I was lost, man. I wanted attention. I wanted to be liked.
Were you an only child?
No, okay. I had a brother, but I was young. Like, my parents divorced when I was five,
okay.
And my brother was 10, and it was like 1982. My father's 100% Sicilian. You don't do that. What are we fucking nuts? Like, that's the thing. What are we nuts? We don't do that. Yeah. You know, we don't. Your mother went crazy. She went fucking crazy because of her. Dude, I'm fucking five, dude. Dude, I was in the back of my mother's car, and he goes, your mother fucking, this was some evil shit. Okay?
Evil
shit. I'm like, dude, I live with it. Like, I can't fuck. Dude, like, I was a little. Oh, dude, my dad is fuck. My dad's another motherfucker. He actually said to me, I'm going to tell you boys, my brother's 10, I'm 5. He goes, I'm going to tell you boys, the devil invaded us. And I was like, what? And he was like, the devil came to us, okay, in the form of your mother for a little while. And I'm fucking like, dude, I just want to go to the movies, dude. I mean, I want to go to the movies, dude. I want to fucking, like, are we going to go to Playland? Like, are we going to, and it's, he's just going, like, you fucking believe this shit? And I'm like, I got to get out of the car and live with the,
mom is the one who decided to leave?
My dad was a big wig at AIG. Okay. My dad was about, like, you know, fur coats and matching Rolexes.
No.
Yeah. Oh, dude, my dad showed up to a pizzeria in $1,100 gaiters, dude. I'm not kidding, dude. I'm kidding. This fucking, my dad showed up fucking, you know, like fur around the neck. My dad would always go, let me tell you something.
You're
okay?
So not like that.
Yeah, no, my dad, I mean, I like, the one thing I took from him is like, I like the higher hotels. I like the luxury
sure,
shit. Like,
pampered. You like to be pampered.
Like we go to a nice cigar lounge and it's nice leather chairs and shit like that. My dad is like, if a man doesn't have a watch or good shoes, he's a piece of shit. Dude, I remember one time
you gotta put that on a shirt, bro.
And my dad is big with jewelry.
Yeah.
Big with jewelry.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad, you know, nice guy, old school Italian racist, you know. He'll go, oh, dude, my dad still can't believe. My father still can't believe Obama was president.
My father
still can't believe Obama was president. He talks about it like it was Katrina. Like, he talks about it like it was a natural disaster.
Yeah, like it was.
You know, and I'm just like, all right, Dad. Like, he's just so – but here's a nice – like, he's not even, like, racist. Like, when he's around people of other cultures, he's so nice. He's just so old school that it's almost like this grandfathered in, you know, thing. And he's actually, like – believe it or not, he's got – wisdom, but he's just another dude, man. My dad is just another dude.
But what's he come from where he's rolling up in furs and shit? Does he come from poverty where he wanted to be something so he's proud of that? Or does he come from money where that's sort of in the how you do it?
Yeah, my grandmother came here from Sicily at 10 years old, didn't speak a lick of English. My grandfather was Sicilian but born here in America. But my dad, it's like that soprano saying, my dad was the firstborn Sicilian son.
In America,
so it's like he's Jesus, you know. It's like everything. Like my aunt, like didn't probably, you know, my aunt moved out to Denver and stuff. But like my dad was like. Well, you know, just like the sun, you know, with him, just, you know, set with him. So, that's kind of the thing. And he was just always like, you know, money was a very, like, you know, I remember one time my dad bought a new Jaguar, 1982, black XJ6, white leather, beautiful car. And we're pulling out of like our Scarsdale Tudor, you know, I would have lived a whole different, but I wouldn't be here. Listen to me. If they stayed together and I would have went to some prestigious, you know, and I'd have been Professor Verz. I would have been a fucking chiropractor.
So,
because I'm not going to be a real doctor. So, you know, but no, I remember we were pulling out of the driveway and our neighbors, they're going, where are you guys going? And I rolled the window down. I was excited to tell them. I go, we're going to McDonald's. My dad goes, hey, don't tell them we're going to McDonald's. Like, don't tell them you're going to McDonald's. Like, it was that shit. And my mom didn't care about, my dad wanted to buy a boat. My dad wanted to buy like an $800,000, $900,000 house in 82. Today it would be like worth $4.5 million. Yeah. So like he was on the way and then the divorce came and me and my brother went with my mom. We lived in a one bedroom apartment, you know, with my mom. My mom would sleep on like the couch in the living room. Me and my brother had this big room and my dad couldn't get over it. So he would say, you know, he would say wild shit about things. It wasn't really handled.
Where would he live?
So he would always live like around where we were at.
But an apartment as well?
Yeah, like he would get like, so he
I
would,
had to probably.
He would get an apartment, you know, he would, you know, always had nice cars, like he would either, yeah, Benz's, he would have Mercedes and shit, but he would be in an apartment near us. And yeah, man, and then things just changed. Then I moved. Then I wanted to be. Then it was like I would drink. And, you know, so it's time to go to college. This is before the first. And I decide to go away. Dude, this is embarrassing to say. I decide to go away to community college.
Wait, it's not American. My stepson is about to do it.
Yeah.
He's telling me I'm going to Santa Barbara. I'm going to live on campus. Like, what? What junior college has a fucking campus? Like, are you talking about apartments, like, right next door? He's like, yeah. I'm like, don't call it campus.
Yeah, like, know? Yeah, they had, like, the apartment. They called them the Meadows. They were apartments, like, on, like, next to the building.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was, like, you know, two floors
adjacent.
And shit.
Adjacent. Yeah, community college adjacent.
Yeah, exactly. And it was up by Syracuse.
Okay.
And it was, like, a school for, like, soccer and lacrosse to really move on to a big school, but I didn't do either. So, you know, but they were like, hey, it's a good, you know, and they were like, oh, it's a party school.
So what was your what did you set out as a major originally?
So what I wanted to do was I wanted to do, like, when I was probably 18, 19, I always did talk about, as a matter of fact, in high school I would tell friends, they'd be like, Paul, you're funny, man, your stories. We had this, like, delusional thing. One day me and my friends are going to go to New York and get me an agent because I told good stories and I was funny at parties. And we would literally talk, like, no, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get on a train. Like, I was going to walk into an agent's
yeah,
office as an 18-year-old and everybody go, dude, you got this kid's just – and then I was going to be a – but I think it was like sports and maybe commentating, maybe some sort of like communications degree where I would either like just talk sports and stuff like that, which ironically I do a podcast mm-hmm. where I do that. So yep. kind of that's involved. But we went, dude, and I just – it was an absolute shit show. I mean, girls knocking on our door with kegs going, you guys want to put on a Wednesday, you know, hammered. I would, you know, smoke weed. I would do all kinds of just stupid shit. I remember one time I drank all night. We wake up at 3 in the afternoon. We had finals once and my buddy Mike was across. We were in the same room. So my bed's here. There's a desk between us and his bed's there. And the alarm's going off. We go, oh shit. And we sit up and was like, dude, finals. And I just go, nah. And we just went back down.
No.
Oh yeah. No school, no class. It was party. It was, are we having a party tonight? And all of a sudden, dude, my mental, I just collapsed.
How long into the semester?
Probably the first, I would say, like, towards the end of the first semester, like, okay. like middle to end of the first semester, dude, I started to, like, have a mental.
What do you start suffering? What happens?
Like, just fatigue in the body and mind, shaky. I was very nervous and anxious. I didn't want to really be around anybody. I would stay in bed. Things started to get bad. And then – so what happened to me and I learned this on the next breakdown in 16 was a lot of health things. My mother was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer wow. when I was in 97. So I'm in high school. I'm about to go to school. I'm a senior having a hard time seeing if I'm going to graduate on time. And I remember I woke up one day and I hear either what is hysterical crying or hysterical laughing in my mother's bedroom. And unfortunately, it was crying and she's pale and she goes, I don't know. I just can't get up. And I was like, well, listen, if you don't want me to go to school, she goes, no, go to school. And then I'm in like fourth period gym and they ran up to me and they go, listen, we don't want to alarm you, but you know, and I drove to school at the time. My car was in a parking lot. She goes, you know, your mother's being rushed to the hospital. You need to go home. And I went home. My mother was there with a friend and my mother was looking bad. And she was on her way in an ambulance to the hospital. And I said, you want me to go? And she goes, don't come with me in the to the ambulance. Go. And I was like, I had a job at a pizzeria. I go, let me go tell the job I'm not coming and I'll come to you. And dude, my mother threw up like a huge amount of her blood count in the fucking ambulance.
Oh.
And she goes there and they're asking her if she wants a priest or a fucking, like they're asking and, yeah, and I get there and and then they're like, it could be like a bleeding ulcer. Come to find out my mom has a tumor in her stomach. And long story short, the best part of this story is that my mom would have cancer in her stomach. They'd cut her open, take it out. Then it would grow back. They'd cut it out, take it out. But after 4 surgeries, you just can't keep doing that. And then little dots started to appear on her liver. Okay. And now it's bad. Now I start to – the only way that I could mentally prepare is I start to envision – excuse me, my mom not around. I have to do that. Like that was the way that I coped with it. And I started to like almost like kind of picture my mom's funeral. It was really fun. My older brother wouldn't accept it. And 2 months before my mother's last relapse – now she's in stage 4. 2 months before her last relapse, the Dana-Farber Institute in Boston was working on a test drug for people with leukemia. And They said that it started to work with, my mother had a cancer called GIST. It's a gastrointestinal, but very, very rare. And they worked it on 100 people. They tried it. Out of the 100 people, it started to work on 26 of them. Out of the, my mother was in the 26.
Then no
it's,
way.
Then it started coming back, and then it started only working on 10 of them. My mother was in the 10. Okay. My mother has not had cancer active in her body to this day.
Your mom's still alive.
My mom's alive.
Fuck yeah.
My mom's alive, and my mom got to see weddings, and my mom got to see grandkids.
Yeah.
And also, and she was in her 40s, and now she's in her 70s. And this drug now, it wipes her out, it her immune system, you know, but, it, you know, small price to pay. So
let's take a quick break and tell you about our first sponsor, Liquid IV. The hot summer months are here, and we need to be proactive to keep our body fueled up and hydrated. Making hydration a priority helps us feel healthier on a day-to-day basis, and it fuels us to be our highest potential. One stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. Not only that, but the product tastes great with flavors like watermelon, strawberry, and lemon lime. Sounds like summer, doesn't it? Now, I just got the straw. I look, you know I love the orange one. I talk about it all the time. But the strawberry one I just got is bomb, man. It's so good. I've been taking them. I take them every day. I've been giving them to neighbors. They all love them. They're all, you got some more of that Liquid IV? I'm like, dial it back, bro. It's great stuff, and it's better than just pumping sugar into your system. Liquid IV hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. It contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks. There's no artificial flavors or preservatives, and there's less sugar than an apple. It's made with clean ingredients, non-GMO, vegan, and free of gluten, dairy, and soy. Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. Grab your Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code honeydew at checkout. That's 25% off of anything, by the way. Anything you order when you get better hydration today using promo code honeydew at liquidiv.com. Our next sponsor is Ritual. We deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies and why, especially when it comes to something we take every day. Ritual's clean, vegan-friendly multivitamin is formulated with high-quality nutrients in bioavailable forms your body can actually use. What you won't find are sugars, GMOs, major allergens, synthetic fillers, and artificial colorants. Plus, the fresh taste and delayed release capsule design make taking your vitamins easy. All right, I take it every day. I'm on a monthly subscription for them. I get their monthly Ritual daily vitamin. I take it every day. And one of the very few things I can actually get a flavor of is the mint flavor it has. It's got this refreshing flavor. It's wild looking. You got to check it out. And it's not, they already tell you, it's not filled with all that crap that you get at the store, all right? Ritual is designed with your life stage in mind. It's now available for women, men, and teens. Ritual multivitamins are scientifically developed to help support different life stages. Ritual makes healthy habits easy. Your multivitamins are delivered to your door, they are, every month with free shipping always. You can start, snooze, or cancel your subscription anytime. And if you don't love Ritual within your first month, they'll refund your first order. You're going to go buy them anyway. Why go get them? Just get them right here. I'm telling you, you get the key nutrients without the BS. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/honeydew to start your Ritual today. Now, let's get back to the dude.
I think now, looking back, when I would get really depressed and down, something was wrong with me medically. So I'm going like, and I said like, but in college, there wasn't really like other symptoms. When you get older, there could be body symptoms.
Sure.
So I was just looking at my dick, right? Cause I was like, yo, is something on my dick? And I was like, yo, so I called my mom and I was like, I think, you know.
Get my fur coat. I'm going to the doctor. Goddamn it.
So I would be like, you know, I was like, you know, I was. You know, like if I was sexually active in college, like I would automatically be like, you know, I call my mom crying and I was like, you know, I think I got HIV. She's like, Paul, like you don't. And I'm like, something's wrong. Why am I? She's like, you're having a, you don't understand. Like you're having a breakdown here. Something. No, you don't understand, mom. I'm sad. I just want to come. Like I can't be here. And like, she was like, I hate hearing you like this. Excuse me. And it was like, she saw it, you know, dude, I got something in my throat. I'm sorry. So, anyway.
It's called trauma.
Yeah, yeah. It's me holding back tears. No, so, yeah, she was like crying, going, I hate seeing you like this, hearing you like this. So it was time to pack up and go home, but I was down, dude.
Let me ask you, during this time, dude, are you just talking to your mom or are you talking to your dad as well?
I'm talking to both, but when it comes to this shit.
Your dad's more like, quit being a fucking pussy.
My dad would just be like, my dad was just always, you'll be all
right. Right.
You'll be all right. You'll be fine. Like my mom was like, my mom went through mental stuff, you know. So yeah, so it was just like, I just couldn't be happy. And I'm home and I'm sad and like I didn't want to be around friends. I was just really just in a bad, bad place, man. And then I had a friend kind of talk, a friend that got like not religious, but well, he got religious. And then I saw him out one time and he just goes, "You're lost, huh?" Out of nowhere, he said that. It was weird. He just saw my mind. And then he talked to me. We went back to my house. We had a nice like talk and he tried to help me and stuff. And I felt a little better the next day. I felt like, oh man, like, you know, it was whatever it was, like not to be like, was that the spirit? Like the way it happened, the way it came to me, my mom was like, "You look better. You look, you know," like he saw it in me and he goes, "You know what? I'm going to take Paul home." And I didn't even expect that guy to be there. He was supposed to live in Florida at the time. And he ended up being there. And, he was an old friend from high school. So I started to slowly come out of it. I rested. I didn't drink, you know, I have very bad OCD and always worried, but it goes medical. I think now looking back, the reason why I told a story about my mom is probably because my mom was sick.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I didn't know.
Right. Sure.
So it was always like something bad. I had a friend at 26 die of cancer. His mom died of cancer. My mom had cancer. So it was like, I was like, oh man, something's going to happen to me, you know? And I think that that's what was happening. So then I came out of it. I got stronger. I got better. I was clean. You know, no booze, nothing, no weed, nothing. And I started to actually go to the community college near my house and I became almost a 3.0 doing well. Go. And then I started doing stand up and I dropped the fuck out. I was like, I'm not there.
I'm out again.
I heard the professor talking, trying to be funny. And I was like, I want to be talking. Mm-hmm. And then I was do like bringer shows in New York and industry nights in New York. And that's when like around 21, I was like, all right, I need to drop out, get a sales job and do stand up.
Okay.
And then 21-year-old kid doing that, and I just got my first manager 6 years in. I start working my way up in stand-up. Then all of a sudden, some big acts would see me. I remember one night, Judah Friedlander goes, "Dude, man, he's in the bathroom." I know. He goes, "You're real funny." And then all of a sudden, Bobby Kelly was like, "Funny." And then I met Bill Burr, and Bill Burr was like, you know, "Hey, man, you're funny, man. Keep it calm. I'm going to refer you to this one room." So all of a sudden, things start going great. And I'll fast forward now to the 2016. Yeah. So now I was opening for Burr on the road. I was in every comedy club in New York City. And it was around 2016. I got off stage in Canada at a hockey arena with Burr. And Burr goes, "Dude, I never saw you do any of that stuff. And it's great." He goes, "You're getting ready for a special, man." And I was like, yeah, I feel something, you know, I feel good. And my first hour album, Night at the Stand, came out in 2015 and it went real well. So now I'm getting better and things are going good. And I have this big, massive 4th of July party every year. Comics, family, friends. And dude, I'm not trying to talk shit, but like I blow up the sky like fucking nobody you ever. No residency does what the fuck I do.
It's July 4th, 1777.
I had motherfuckers coming up to me going, "Dude, how's this legal?" I have friends going, "I don't know. Like, how is this at a residency, dude?" I mean, my neighbor threatened to shoot me. He said, my neighbor said, next year I'm gonna have a gun. I fucked it up, dude. I had illegal rockets from the Bronx in my house. I had shit that was on the Macy's barge, like in a fucking backyard, dude. Like the circumference of the.
Yeah.
Bonfires. We were lighting up the sky. We had this great party. But the night before, Ari Shaffir and Joe Bartnick came up. We drank a bottle of whiskey. We stayed up by the fire until 7 a.m. Then the night of the 4th, I stayed up again till 7 a.m. drinking. So now my mind's getting weaker. But I noticed something was happening with me where I just wasn't feeling right. Okay. I do a show in Connecticut and like everything is in slow motion and I'm having anxiety attacks.
On the stage? Dude, like you feel everything slow down?
That's why I fucking love you, dude. Cause I'm on stage at the Funny Bone in Hartford. Okay. There's 240 people. I'll never forget. It was like a Leah Janine. You know, Aaliyah Janine, she was in the adult porn industry and then she moved over to doing stand up. And she ran this room and she goes, "Oh, Verzi, why don't you come out to the thing?" I was like, 240 people there. My buddy Dave Temple's there. And dude, everything's in slow motion. and I'm talking to them in the green room, but I'm not there.
Yeah.
I'm not there, dude. And like, my head was hot and I'm trying to concentrate. And I never forget, I'm on stage on a Thursday night at the Funny Bone. I had some fans come out to see me, and I remember killing and watching the table right to the right, laughing hard. And I felt like I was next to my body. So I was watching myself and I wasn't there. And dude, it's only an hour and a half drive from there to my house. And it felt like 3.5 hours. And on that drive, I convinced myself that I had a brain tumor. I convinced myself. I said, there's something in my brain. There's tightness here. So what was, I left something out. I would have these dizzy spells on stage.
All right.
So there would be tightness in my forehead, but then I noticed that I would either have to touch the stool or touch the wall. And I was having, I'm going, dude, something's wrong. So I came on, I told my wife, I go, babe, the tightness in the head. And she goes, Paul, you got to stop. I have tightness in the head. And then I went up to my mom, and my mom saw that look in my face. And I'm like, here we are, back to where we were. And she's like, Paul is in such, like, I would, dude, I couldn't like get it. I couldn't make myself a sandwich. Now weeks are going by.
What do you mean?
I was just so.
Like, you bedridden?
I was like in bed, and the thought of getting up. Here's the thing. Like, I'm an upbeat, positive dude. Okay, like all my friends, like Giannis and Bartnick and Burr, they're always like, oh, Verzi's the easy going, the easy one, you know? And so when the depression hits somebody like me, it hits even harder, because now I'm in a place that I'm not, you know, now I'm in this realm that I'm not used to.
Like, what the fuck is this?
I'm sad, and yeah. I'm never sad. I'm happy, you know?
And at the time, are you married? You have
married with two kids.
With kids, yeah.
And so my mother, I go to a doctor that I used to go to when I was younger. I was like, I got a brain, something's wrong, man. And he goes, you know what I think? He goes, I think you're fine. And he's like, but for you, and they had to like get approved to get me, because I kept having this pain. They had to get approved to get me a brain scan. And dude, I went for a CAT scan on my fucking brain.
You did.
And I'm in there, and I'm doing everything I can to not lose it in this fucking tube. And my brother's outside. My brother's going to hate seeing you like this. And I'm going, and in my mind, I'm literally going, now Ryan, this is no shit. And it gets worse than this, dude, you know. I'm going, they're seeing my tumor right now. When I get out of here, they're going to be looking at me like, you need to go to the hospital.
Wait. While you're in the tube.
I'm laying in
your
the tube.
Your thought is, this guy or girl out here is seeing my tumor
when
right
I come
now.
Out, when I come look out, they're going to look at me and you got to get the fuck out of here, and they're going to cut your head open tonight.
Yeah, that's anxiety. It'll get you because that tight ass tube, too. No place to be with those thoughts.
Don't open your fucking eyes. And one time, I had emergency surgery once near my appendix. They thought it was my appendix. It was something else. So I have gone to the doctor before and been told, you need to go. And so they cut that out. So now in my mind, I'm like, oh, they're going to see this shit. So I get out and they go,
and
thanks.
Are you thinking about your kids? And
I couldn't look at my kids because I didn't think I was going to get out of 16.
Oh, God.
And I'm staying in the guest room. And Stacy's like, daddy's sick. So the kids just knew daddy was sick. Now, mind you, stand up is going phenomenal. People are going, dude, you're ready for a special.
Are you still powering
through that? So that's another great question. So I canceled 1 weekend and like a handful of sets, and then I would just power through. So there was one where I was when it got so bad, when I was in the heart of, and when I found out when you're in a clinical depression, they say a clinical depression is about 12 weeks. Like, it could be like 90 days, and I was in it. And what was hard was it was hard for me, because like I said, I'm a positive dude. So like, I knew I wouldn't kill myself, and that made it worse. Cause like, I'm just going to live in hell. Cause I was in hell.
I know exactly.
So
what you mean.
I was in fucking hell.
I'm not going
to
do that.
You know,
so
like, I didn't have the comfort to be like, I'll fucking eat a book. Like, I didn't have that. I would never do that to my family. And I don't want to. I want to live.
Yeah. Cause
I know how nice it could be when shit's good.
Exactly.
You know, now I got to give a lot of credit to Giannis Pappas, one of my closest friends. He would come up to the house because he lives near me now.
Dude, he came on
and
told his corona story about being at your house with the ambulance and his wife chasing it and everything.
Oh, yeah. He went through it. And you know what? I helped him through that.
That's what he
said. And he helped me through. Like, he would come up and be like, dude, you got to understand, like, this is in your head. So, you know, then it was just a really, like.
So when you came out of the MRI,
what
did they say to you?
They were like, CAT scan came back. It's clear. It's good. Now,
how do you feel at that moment?
Now, this is when I knew I was in a real bad spiral. So I, unbeknownst to me at the time, I have a disc issue, and the disc issue causes weakness and what's it called?
Numbness,
and also like when it vibrates,
tingling and all that shit.
Yeah, tingling, but also like it makes you, like jerks your your muscles would like really? Jump up like a yeah, like it's so like your muscles will like spasms.
Okay.
So now I'm Googling shit. And
that's what my doctor tells me not to do.
Because I'm in a rabbit hole now. So now I'm going, that doctor who studied for fucking 10, 12 years, yeah. He's out of his fucking mind. Okay, I know I'm right. Sick. And now everyone's crazy to me. So I'm going to my wife and going, don't you fucking see? Look at me. Because I couldn't accept, I didn't have the control. I wanted control. So the only way I can control it is by knowing what it is. I didn't know that it was just me. So like it got so bad, you know, after that, like I, you know, you're fine. You don't have nothing in your brain and anything, but I was just so low and like to the point where like Bill Burr is, you know, my, you know, not only like a best friend, but he was like a mentor, you know, and he would like when I was coming up and, you know, he was somebody that was like, you know, when you're a comic and you're coming up and that guy's going, dude, he told me things I would do that I was like, what? He'd be like, dude, you're going to start selling out comedy clubs and you're going to go to theaters. And I'm going, dude, I'm making $450 this week.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm not, like, nobody's booking me. Like, what are you? Yeah. And like, but, you know, then he became like family and he's my son's godfather.
Oh, that's great.
And like, so he was away for this. So he would call my wife because I was just so down. Like, I didn't really want to even talk to anybody. You know, Giannis would come up and like kind of sit there with me, but like, I didn't want to talk to anybody. So Bill would call my wife, be like, how's he doing? Bartnick would check in, like, you know, just friends of mine that were either in California or someone just kind of checking in, but like kind of from afar. But they didn't know how dark I was. Right. They didn't know that I would go out with my wife and being like, you know, you're sitting with somebody that's not going to make it out of the year. Like I would be sitting there eating. Like we went to a wedding and I just had to tough through. And I was just at it. Like I'm like drinking wine going, these people don't understand. Like I'm not going to be like,
y'all know I'm dying, right?
Yeah, like that. So. My fucking arm is, my arms are.
You really felt like that, huh?
Dude, I didn't feel like that. I knew it.
In your mind, this is the last wedding I'm going to be at.
Dude,
I'm not going to see Carol and Janice anymore.
Yeah. You know, but fuck this wedding. No, yeah. You know, but like, I'm just. Yeah. I'll drink all their shit. I don't even know these people. So,
I'm going to kick your
kid. Yeah, I'm here for my wife. I'm resentful and shit. I should be in bed. But no, I'm just in a bad place. And, you know, comedy clubs are like, dude, like things were going, like that's the thing. So what I didn't realize is what anxiety can do. But here's where things got crazy. So I'm having like weakness in my arm. Now, at the time, I don't know it's my neck. I don't know it's my disc. My wife is going, Paul, you have issues with you know, and everything gets magnified with anxiety. And I felt like I kept saying that my right leg was weaker. So now I Google and I'm Googling and it starts saying, well, there could be muscle atrophy. It could be MS, right?
I had numbness in an arm one time, thought it was MS. I was worried it was MS.
I'm in the lowest part of my life. Okay. Having a hard time looking at my kids who I love. Beautiful kids. I'm not just saying that, dude. You look at my kids, like everyone says my kids should be J. Crew model. I have these beautiful little kids that love me to death. I love them. I'm so lucky as a man to have this. I got a beautiful wife who supports me and shit. And I can't look at my kids because I don't think it was so fucking brutal. I call my wife from the bathroom and she's at work.
Your own. Oh, okay.
No. She's at work and I'm in the bathroom and I go, I'm not even joking. I go, I'm almost crying. And I go, babe, I figured it out. Now, all these doctors,
yeah, right.
Tests, I go, I figured it out. Okay. I go, I have MS. And she goes, what?
Right.
Now, I'm like on the bowl and shit. Yeah. And I'm looking at my phone in a full-fledged depression. And I figured out what the fuck I have.
Yeah.
And I diagnosed myself right. with one of the most horrible muscular diseases. And then I'm going, well, there's other lists on here. There's ALS. There's muscular something. That's the twitching. And dude, it got so intense when she came home. I was making her stare at my leg to see if one leg was thinner than the next.
Like it already set in.
like
your muscle just.
But it gets
like a balloon.
But I go. Is my right calf a little? And dude, I got her so convinced. She goes, all right, it might be a little thinner.
But naturally, they are.
She goes. Yeah. She goes. It's. She goes. You're right. She goes, all right, fine. Your right one is thing. And then
that's all you
dude, I'm laying in bed with her and I got so, I was like, I'm dying. I'm dead. It's over. And I went to bed. I went to.
How do you know you're dying?
And I go to bed, and we go to bed almost like holding each other. And dude, I was so delusional and convincing that I saw a tear come from her. I think she started to think I was sick. So now my wife is going, I'm living like, with this dying motherfucker.
Dying motherfucker. I'm about to push his ass in a wheelchair. I got two kids.
So I call.
I feel like that was a moment for herself. Tear was for her.
And my wife stayed. So she looked, Paul, you got to stop it. Like, my wife is tough. And sometimes I'd be like, you're not being there the way I need you to. And she goes, no, I can't let you buy into this shit. So my wife is strong, dude. She's great, dude. She really is. She's strong. She's beautiful. Like, my wife is a woman that, like, you, like, I married the right woman, you know, great mother and all that. But like, she would be kind of cold. And I'm going like, you don't fuck. So my mom and I would talk all the
What's
time.
What's something that she said to you that really still you remember?
Like you know,
when she was trying to snap you into it,
like,
what's something?
Enough of this. Like, you got kids, like shit like that. And I'm going, yeah, but when you're there, when you're in
I
that.
I got kids and MS. Try to tell you.
I was like, dude, there still could be something in my head. You know, they missed it.
How you gonna say that when I got two different calves? How you gonna look at me and say that when my calves are different?
They're my fucking legs.
I love to touch you. That hurts.
Yeah, she started crying.
She saw those calves. Yeah.
She was like,
he said he never played soccer. That's what it's in college.
I'm going, see, and that's what Google said. That's what Google said. You know? So I call my mom, and my mom goes, I can't. I go, Mom, I need to go. So I went to my mom, and I was taking – my mom had Xanax, and I started taking Xanax, and that would help me sleep. And my mom goes, what can I do for you, dude? I was in the worst place. Like, my wife is like, I don't know if we're ever going to get out of this. Now we're talking 2 months. Okay, now we're talking 2 months,
really?
And I'm like struggling, dude. I'm struggling to do sets. By the way, I'm fun. I was funnier than I ever was.
I want to ask you this. Pause for a second. I had the same thing sort of happen to me. Not sort of. It did happen to me at 2016 as well. From December of 2015, like all the way for 6 months.
Yeah.
But like, I found complete solace, comfort, like you step out of a storm and you're just in this quiet space, and I'm still, despite everything that's going on, that I'm splitting with my daughter's mother and that I'm only going to have my kid half the time, and I'm doing math in my head like, oh my God, that's only 9 years. You know, I'm doing all that nonsense. But on stage, it didn't matter whether I did 12 minutes or 15 or an hour. It's the only place in my life ever where no matter what the fuck is going on, when I step up there, I don't think about anything but that.
Yeah. Yes.
It just doesn't enter my mind.
No.
It's the most free I probably am in my life.
Yeah. And what happens is, like, you know, when your talent takes over and the story takes over and you give people joy, they don't know what you're going through, you know? So you're in that art and you're doing it and you walk off. So that was the thing. When I did muster up the energy to go down.
Were you focused the entire time during your sets?
Except for that Connecticut one, like when once I knew, like, all right, like, I'm got to just get up there and get through the time. My only concern was if I got lightheaded, I didn't want to fall. Mm-hmm. So I would just make sure. But when I got into the set and I started having good sets, I'd be okay. And I would get through it and I would get laughs and everything like that. But I was the funniest, obviously, that I ever been. Because when you're at that point, like where we are right now, where I sit now with you, me and you, and where you sit, we're the funniest we've ever been right now.
Yes.
Right now, at this moment. And in 2 weeks, it'll be then. So that was going good when I can do it. But I talked to the doctor. He goes, good news. He just tried to get me out of it. Good news. Your brain's fine, everything like that. I go, but my leg. He goes, listen, if you want, I can get you tests for your muscles. I don't think you need it, but I could get you a test. I could send it. So he sends me over to this Asian doctor. I go to this fucking place. And I go in, and the Asian doctor, he's got kind of an accent and shit. And I was like trying to explain to this fucking guy. And he's just a doctor who's smart, and I'm in a delusion. Okay, so he's sitting in front of somebody who's fucking in a full-fledged delusion. filled with panic and anxiety and knows he's dying and all these things. And he goes, well, what are you worried about? And I go, I got like MS, some kind of muscular thing. And he goes, what? And I don't know if it's MS, ALS. I go, I got twitching in my arms and everything like that. He goes, I'm going to tell you something. He goes, I can give you a test that's going to test your muscle activity.
Let me see your calves. Yeah.
lift up your pant leg. No. So he goes, before I see a test, take your pants off. No.
Roll them up.
So he goes, I'm going to give you a test that – this is real, dude. This is how fucking nuts I am. He goes, I'm going to test your muscle activity. You're going to lay down and I'm going to put needles through your whole body. And he goes, it's excruciating and many people after the third or fourth needle want to stop. But I'll be able to tell you what's – and I go, fuck, let's do it. And, dude, I'm laying on the thing. I'm laying on a fucking thing I start to become a voodoo doll, right? Mm-hmm. This dude's putting things in there. And Ryan, when I tell you, I felt nothing.
No.
Zero pain to the point where I didn't even feel the initial prick. I looked and saw them in there. That's how.
You saw it in your skin?
Like, I saw it in my skin. And he would, as he'd put it in, he'd be looking at the computer monitor to see like my, and I never told this story. I was going to tell this story on a podcast someday down the road, but I'll tell you because this is what this is. I never told this story about the muscle thing and the test I took. And he's looking and I'm laying there. And as he's looking at the screen, and he was, you know, he had that doctor face looking really studying. And, you know, he's an Asian dude. So I'm in my mind, I'm like, he's a little smarter. He knows I'm sick. Like I thought he knew I'm sick quicker than, you know, so I'm going, this guy knows. And I'm laying there and I'm going, he's seeing some really wild shit right now. And
as
I'm laying on the table, dude, I started to really convince myself and tell myself like how my funeral is going to be. And I started I started thinking about how my funeral was going to be. Would I know when I was dead in the box? Would people who would be there, how would it be? I'm laying there as this is happening. And that's where I am. Dude, that's where I was, dude. And I'm waiting. And then I had to go two times for him to completely rule it out.
Why?
So because
you didn't feel that shit on the first round.
No, with the test, he goes, in order for me to really tell you, there's three different tests. I could give you one on one time and two on the other. So I leave. And he goes, come back. And I'm just sitting I go to my mom's one night.
Because I had an incident too. How long from leaving till you go back?
2 days. Okay. And I'm at my mom's because my mom lives right near the doctor. And Stacy was probably better off just with the kids, you know, not having fucking sick dad in the room.
Yeah, right.
And I go back the last day and my mom gives me a big hug and she goes, if you need to cry, cry. And I was like, no, I'm not going to cry, you know. And I went there. And I lay down and I'm going through the needles again and he's looking at the thing again and I know I'm going to finally get results on this day. And he goes, excuse me 1 second. I have to walk out of the room for a second. And like he goes, I'll be right back. I don't know. Somebody called him in. And when I tell you, I'm not trying to be funny here on your show. When I tell you, I was absolutely convinced that – he left the room to call my family and to say, this is it.
Listen. You got me believing this shit now. That's what I'm thinking. Oh, he's going out of the room. It's bad news.
He's saying to have his mother and wife be here when he gets out because we need to sit down and tell him. We need to sit down and tell him what's going on with him and send him somewhere to get the Ryan. Fucking convinced, not thinking it, no, knowing it. And I'm going, this is it. Now, this was the answer. I told you. I knew it was something wrong. It was in my brain.
He's like,
I knew
Shirley
it was something
wrong. Brought some donuts. It's Thursday.
and it was like a phone call. So he comes in, and he was very nice. And he knew I was mental. He saw in my face I was hurt. And he's done. And he goes, that's it. And I sit up, and he goes, you can put your shirt on. And I put my shirt on. And he looks, and he goes, based on my tests, everything is fine. You're okay. You have everything. And he just looked at me and he goes, unfortunately, this is here for you.
Okay.
And he pointed to his head.
You like a brain tumor? We ruled it out.
I told that motherfucker. I want my fucking MRI money back. No. So I looked at him and my eyes welled up and I said, thank you. I said, you don't know what you did for me. And I almost, hugged him and he looked at me. So then I went home and I talked to my mom. I called my wife and I think like that was kind of the beginning. That was the beginning of the healing to know, wow, like where my mind really went. I went home. It still took me a couple weeks. So this started, just so you know, this initially hit in July of that summer. And by September, I started to go, maybe I'm coming back. And I remember Giannis going, dude, when you come back, you're going to be stronger than ever. And almost a year to the month I started to feel better, I shot my first special for Comedy Central, I'll Say This, and it became a hit for them. And it was like, and I remember, Ben, I talked about it. I talked about it on stage. I said, you know, when you're in the darkest place, especially for a happy, you know, guy like me, to go there and to know like the things that your mind can do. And what I didn't know is anxiety can give you a physical symptom. People don't understand that. If you say your shoulder is fucked up and there's a fucking bump in your shoulder, you'll find the bump, which is probably a bone, but you'll find it. It will start to hurt, and it's all because of the power of the mind. And I think it was a culmination of everything. I think that my life at the time was a whirlwind. I think that I was tired and beat up like I was in college. Again, I think my mom getting sick. I think the fact that tightness was in my head. So it could never be something wrong with me. I needed to know a reason. So it was a medical thing. It could never be, well, Paul, you're just fucked up.
Right.
You're just fucked up. Mm-hmm. You're mentally fucked up. You have OCD, anxiety, and depression, and this is your problem. It couldn't be that because I'm killing. I'm doing good. I'm with my, so it was almost like there was nothing. And through, honestly, man, through love, through friends, through doctors, through support, my wife, mother, Giannis Pappas, who I have to give credit to during this time, It all started to come back, and then I felt fucking bulletproof. And whenever I would feel something creep in, I would, you know, there are times where I get a little, you know, even now we all have it, but I'm like, you know what? Relax. It's not that. You know, there were times after I got COVID, I was coughing up stuff, and my mind was now able to go, look, man, you had COVID, you have a cold now. Relax. You're fully vaxxed. You got through it. And now I'm able to go out on the road and focus at the task at hand, go on stage, you know, the best stand up I've ever been doing. People are saying this new hour is better than the last. So like now I'm able to, and like, listen, I got kids, man. And life is short, but it, you know, you said something when we were off the air that really hit me when you were like, you're going to feel different at 35 and you're going to feel different at
you're a different person at 30 at 40 than you were at 35.
And I'm sure at 50.
At 50.
You know,
and hopefully you are a different, better person as we get older. Like, oh well, you know, 20-year-old me would have been out there doing this and that. 25's not. 30's not, you know.
Yeah, I think at the ages we are, right? Like I just turned 40 a couple years, like I'm in my early 40s, right? And it definitely changed, and it changed with like, cause I always used to laugh. When I had friends in the 40s, I'd be like, these motherfuckers are always yawning. Every one of my friends in the 40s, fucking 10
all
o'clock
kids, these motherfuckers,
I'm going like, what the I'm 36, dude. I'm 36. This motherfucker's yawning. I mean, it's 9:30.
People are like, you tired? I'm like, nah, 48, man. I ain't tired. This is what my body does.
I remember
does.
One of my buddies, I thought it was like 41. He's like, I picked him up. He got in the car. He's like, ugh, what are we doing? I'm like, what the fuck?
I do. I stretch and crack my back. I'm like, let's get it. Let's take a quick break and tell you about our next sponsor, GoHenry. Teaching your own kids how to be responsible with money doesn't have to be tough. GoHenry makes it easy to teach kids a lifetime of financial skills. Helping your kids be financially literate can make a huge difference in their future, and GoHenry can help. I got this little card for my daughter. I'm putting money on it, teaching her about tax, teaching her about how you use the card at the store, punching in her code, all that stuff. And then we'll put money on it. Be responsible. Like you do these chores, you get 10 bucks. And what's 10 bucks buy? Let's go see what that buys. And then we go and use the card. You can keep filling it up. Look, man, I didn't learn even that. Okay. We learned how to write a check in seventh grade, and you don't even write checks anymore. All right. GoHenry's debit card for kids and app for parents is an easy, fun way to teach kids good money habits. It's designed to help young people ages 6 to 18 or 48 learn about money firsthand to build financial independence. With GoHenry, they can use their card to make purchases online, in stores, order an ATM, and track spending in real time. You can set savings goals, make donations. You can help them learn to budget and practice generosity. It's easy for parents. It's simpler than handling cash and allows boundary setting and flexibility. So
Get started at GoHenry.com and get one free month with promo code Honeydew. That's one free month at GoHenry.com, promo code Honeydew. Our next sponsor is Truff. Truff is a luxury hot sauce brand inspired by the elegance and indulgence of truffles. Truff's original hot sauce blends black truffles, ripe chilies, savory spices, and organic agave nectar. Their hotter sauce, which that's my favorite, it takes the heat up a notch with extra jalapenos, red chili, and habanero for those who demand the spicier things in life. And the white truff hot sauce is infused with rare and decadent white truffle. It's the number one best-selling sauce on Amazon. It's the number one best-selling sauce on Whole Foods. Look, man, I just posted the other night about it. I steamed some shrimp. I threw it on there. They've got so many good products, from pasta sauces, olive oils, all of it. They are bomb. It's so good. Here's what you can do. Get 15% off site-wide, all right, plus free shipping with the promo code Honeydew at Truff.com. That's 15% off of everything at T-R-U-F-F, and that's F as in fantastic, .com, promo code Honeydew. I promise you're going to like their stuff. Now, let's get back to the dew. The mind is poison sometimes. Yeah. I went through my own thing. So after my daughter's mother told me she wanted to split, it was October 2015. My daughter's a year old. And all that come of the, oh my God, you know, control, and my kids are going to be around other people and this and that. And then, boom, I get kidney stones. And then, boom, my legs start clotting. And then they don't know. They're telling me it could be leukemia and lymphoma. And I'm like, you know, my doctor's like, I'm going to send you to the oncologist. Don't panic. I'm like, already I'm panicking.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that a blood cancer doctor? He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm panicking. He's like, but it's right next door. I'm like, I don't give a fuck where it is.
Dude, the fact that they even tested you for that, I would have just thrown myself in a guest room for another 2 months.
I'm telling you. So check this, right? So this is why I asked you how long it was. So
shit.
I go in and this doctor and I have this conversation. This dude's cool as shit. He's like, look, man, I don't see it too often like that. Both legs clot like this. Like, and it's funny because they ask me at first, they're like, is anyone beating you at home? Like, who's coming at me? Who's coming at me? Listen, nobody wants, if somebody hit, I wish somebody would hit me right now. Yeah. I'd love to get some anger and aggression out on somebody.
Yeah, that's fucking hell. Somebody beat you at home.
So,
that explains it.
I'm like, that's what this is. So, I'm in and out of the hospital 3-4 different times. They can't figure out what the fuck it is, and it's progressively getting worse. And I remember coming home, and I mean, this was my darkest. And I remember coming home and looking at my daughter's mother, and she's like, what is it today? And I was like, look, they think I might have leukemia or lymphoma. I've got to go through a bunch of these tests. Can you just back off? Can you just back off? Because we're still I have to move out.
Shit.
It's Christmas. It's Thanksgiving. I'm going through it. And the doctor gives me his personal cell phone number. And I go, oh, my God. He's like, what? I go, this is the most nervous I've ever been in my life. He goes, what do you mean? I go, a cancer doctor just gave me – you're allowing me to interrupt your weekend if some shit goes wrong.
This motherfucker's boat on Saturday?
You know? Yeah, right? And I'm like, you want me to contact – he's like, look, you're
– yeah.
I guess there's a normal number for what your blood levels and shit should be. And I was like 7 times higher. And he's like, I am going to put you on blood thinners now. We're just going to bring you – he's like, it's my belief I can reset you to 0 and then you'll be good to go. I'm like, all right. He's like – but you got to come back in 2 weeks. I'm like, for 2 weeks?
Fuck,
that's why I asked.
Yeah,
yeah. For 2 weeks, I'm walking around every day doing stand-up, going to work, doing whatever. I'm single parenting, wondering if I'm about to die and never see this little fucking kid. And I'm losing my shit.
That's mental prison, dude.
It's mental prison.
It's mental torture. Even the 2 days that I went in my thing, it was just really like the Xanax got me to sleep and shit, or made me at least calm down. And you know what's funny is like my wife – you know, my wife, she goes, hey, yeah, I went to the doctor. She goes, this is how strong she is. She just plows through because she's got that. I'm Mediterranean. I'm a fucking passionate fucking Sicilian Greek. And my wife is like Finnish, Swedish, German, Irish. They go, yeah. She goes, they found a spot on my lung. They saw something in my lung. So I'm just going to, they're just going to test it to make sure. And then never talked about it. Worked. I'm a bitch. So I'm a bitch. Dude, my wife is like, I'm like, a spot on your lung? I was like, do you want to go sit somewhere? Do you want to go to a bed and breakfast? I'll take care. Like, we don't know how much time you got. And she's fucking working and shit, taking care of the kids. Oh, you need to take care of the kids. Like, having her shit together. And me, and I think it now, looking back, like, now I'm not really, like, it is, like, I just learned, like, life. Dude, I want, if I could tell this one story, man, because this was something that let me, this is, I think we also know, like, you get more, you know mortality, right? You know.
Well, can I say that? I want to finish this story because this is what this lady said to me.
Oh, sure.
I walk in.
Yeah.
And she just looks at me. She's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I'm exhausted. I'm here to get these damn results. And I don't know how to feel. And then she's not supposed to tell me.
Yeah.
And she goes, I saw your results. I'm like, oh, my God. Can you tell me? She goes, I'm not supposed to. I go, will you tell me? She goes, you're good. I go, I am. She's like, you're fucking good.
Oh, fuck.
She goes, let me tell. And I was like, oh. And I'm just relieved. At that point, I am so like, oh, God. And she looked at me, and I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it again because it's one of the nicest things anyone's ever said to me. It's one of the most powerful things that everyone's ever said to me, and it was a positive for both of us. And she looked at me, and she goes, what are you doing after this? And I said, I'm just going to go home and relax. And she goes, go celebrate. And I go, yeah, you know, whatever. She goes, listen to me. Go celebrate. She goes, it's my job every day to tell people they have cancer. I have to come and tell people they have cancer, the thing you feared most. And today, I got to tell you, you didn't.
Whoa.
You go celebrate that. I still get chills every Whoa. Time. And I'll never forget it hit me. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to go celebrate tonight. Then I'm going to drink. I'm going to smoke. I'm going to have a good meal. I'm going to celebrate life tonight.
Dude, that feeling, and this is if we ever do this again, I had a 4-day cancer scare when they took this thing out of my – they had emergency surgery, and for 4 days I waited for it. But when you find out that you're good and what people don't understand is – you take for granted not being in pain. We take for granted our eyesight.
I was in pain.
Dude, pain. Like eyesight.
Chest pain, everything.
Like I remember I had like a fucking astigmatism in my left eye. And I'm like, yo, am I going to see that line forever?
Yeah,
because like, that's not okay.
Is that squiggle in real life?
Yeah, that's not – and you start to realize. You're like, yeah, man, like you got to – but I think the pandemic put a lot of things into perspective. Like it really did as far as – and when you ask me the last question, I'll get to that. But I just got to tell you this story about my cat.
Yeah, please.
I got to tell you a story about my cat, okay? So I'll make it – the short of it is this. For my wife's 26th birthday, I got her this kitten. And she named it Thomas, and this motherfucker grew up to be a fucking 20-pound Hall of Famer. But we got his brother Stanley the next day because a friend picked Thomas and brought him to me. And I go, let me see if I would have picked him. So I went to see the litter, and this little gray cat, all curious, I go, that's the motherfucker I would have got. So then I tell her that, and now we have Stanley and Thomas. Fast forward 16 years. They've been to us with all of our houses, with our kids.
Both of them still together.
Both of them still together. Okay. All they knew. And then we bring in the dog, and that's a whole other story. But these two cats were with us for 16, Thomas for 16 years and 3 months, and now he's gone. And Stanley, who is still there now. And dude, when I tell you, I'm not trying to be funny. They left a dead mouse on the welcome mat every day for a year.
Did they really?
Different mouse. crushed shit.
Yeah.
Thomas dragged in a chipmunk. Yeah, I found out that they want to show you as
right,
a gift.
That's their reward.
I didn't know. So this dude dragged in a fucking chipmunk. I'll show you the picture. He dragged in a chipmunk. And I just hear my wife downstairs going, okay, yeah, good job. And this fucking big ass chipmunk was bludgeoned. Yeah, and he's just sitting there like a baby lion next to this thing that he just beat the shit out of, right?
Good job.
Now no cost is too much for me with my cats.
Yeah.
Okay, or my dog. Me and Burr talked about this on the podcast, so I don't want to repeat myself, but I'll get into the sip. I pay. I signed a $400 resuscitate in the middle of the night for my cat. Resuscitate this. And he was 16. I was like, I don't give a fuck. Bring him back. If he dies, I want him back. I don't give a fuck. I'll pay whatever it is. He's been with us for a long time. And I see Thomas. He started acting weird for 2 months and he's laboring now. And he would be like this. And this piece of shit vet took $700 from me. And then 2 days later, took another $700 going, I think we could help him. And he knew he was dying. And that really bothers me. He knew he was dying. But this big, beautiful cat who was my wife in our family for fucking 16 years. And I'm looking at him for 2 nights and he's given the look. And I'm going, I think this is, and the guy goes, I drained all this fluid from him. He should be better. And he goes, he might be better for a week or so. I still paid the $700 to keep this, to see if he'll bounce back. I'm watching him, dude. And, I'm just looking at him and I know, I can't make him go through this another night. So I go, if he makes it through the night, you know, I'm going to just, cause sometimes there's different scenarios, people say. Let them die. So they like to run away and be alone. That's the beautiful thing. People don't know about cats.
I didn't know that.
Cats are dope. When cats die, they're so prideful. They want to go alone. So when a cat, and he tried getting out of the door. When a cat's going to die, whether it's a domestic cat or a big cat in the wild, they go off alone and they die alone.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like, what's his name? In Young Guns. What was it? What was this fucking Lou Diamond Phillips' character? Chavez.
Chavez.
When Chavez, he's out there doing it with his horse. Yeah. So
that's
like, he went off by himself. He leaned against the wall and he saw the fucking spirit horse. Yo, don't sleep on Young Guns. That shit was dope.
It is great.
Yo, Billy the Kid. But anyway, so I digress. So I see him and he's laboring and shit. And I know that it's time to go somewhere and talk to the people and stuff. Now, my son, you know that song by Marshmello? This is some sappy shit, but this is like, you know that song by Marshmello? Lately, I've been thinking, yes. I want you to be happier. So I just thought it's a song about like relationships and shit. My son goes, I don't like that song. And I go, why? He goes, it's just, there's a dog in it and it's sad. Now I'm really down and sad. And this started, if I was in Oklahoma City performing and I knew Thomas was in bad shape, I thought he'd bounce back. I came back and I knew that it was probably going to be the last time I ever go away and see the cat again. And, I'm looking at him and he just was in the same, he was done. And, I go, let me just see what that song is about before I take him. So I'm laying on my bed and I play the Marshmello video like a dick. And it's a little girl. The fucking video is a little girl.
I've never seen it.
Oh, dude. And I just, the day I'm taking him, yeah. I go, let me wallow in more pain. Yeah. Let me just really fucking experience this horror, right? I don't know why we do that. When I was afraid to fly, I would watch plane crashes just to.
Me too.
Just, yeah, yeah. Let me. I know yeah. I'm taking this poor thing, which is probably done. Let me see this sad video that my son doesn't like because of animals. And the song comes on. I want you to be happier. And it's a little girl who gets a puppy. And she gets the puppy, she's sad, and then she gets the puppy and she's happy. And then as she grows, the puppy grows. And then she goes to high school and the puppy grows. And now she's about to go to college. And then she's sad because they go to the vet and they got to put this fucking thing down. Okay? And I got to tell myself it's a video, that dog's alive. Okay?
Yeah. That dog's getting residual. You sag after.
That dog's getting, their parents are getting a check. I'm sitting there.
He's getting the medical insurance. We're not getting that.
And I'm like, I'm looking at this little girl. And then the father comes in the fucking room and looks at the little girl and shakes his head like this as if to say, that's all we could do.
Yeah.
And the dog dies and I'm on the bed and I'm not crying, but it's fucking me up. And I put the phone down. I'm like, all right, Thomas, we're going to go. And in my mind, I'm going, well, maybe you shouldn't have done that. And I take the cat and I put him in a thing. And it was Stacy's cat. It was her gift when she was 26. She goes, can I just have a couple of minutes? And she goes in and she comes out and she's wiping her eyes and she's crying. And I told her, my daughter's got that Sicilian. She has a hard time. She just, you know, she goes from like happy little girl to I'll kill everybody in your family.
Yeah.
And Lucas is crying and Sophie is just like looking and Sophie thinks, I think in her mind, maybe there's a chance he's coming back because this has happened before. But I kind of know he's not going to come back. So I go and the woman comes out and I recognized her and she used to work for that piece of shit that took money. Mm. And I go, yeah, I really wasn't happy with. And she just was like, she didn't say anything, but she was like, yeah, I haven't been there for 3 years. And she goes, but I remember you. And I go and she looks at him and she goes, let me take him in. She goes, I'm going to just do an X-ray. I'm not going to charge you. I want to see what's going on. And I was like, you know, just tell me what you would do. But it's bad. So I'm in the car and I'm sitting there and I'm just fucking waiting. And I know she's coming out. Hand to God, that song from Marshmello comes on the radio. I swear to God on my children. I swear to God on my, I would never say that on the show. I would never. I'm sitting in this fucking driver's seat, dude. I'm sitting in this driver's seat. My fucking, I got a beard. I look like a fucking, and I'm sitting there in my fucking jet black beard, my bald head. And I'm sitting in this fucking Lexus looking around. And and all of a sudden, lately I've been, and I'm going, no, dude. Are you bullshitting? And that's when I was like, there's something else in this life.
There definitely is.
By the way, this is 100% true. This is 100% true. That song came on an hour and a half after I put myself through pain on my bed while my cat was in the bathroom and I listened to it and now it's on. And I know at that moment, she's going to tell me he's done. And dude, I got the chills right now. She comes out And she goes, look, she goes, I took a little sample of the fluid from the chest and she showed me it was like this. It wasn't good. And she goes, his lungs are floating in fluid. His heart, there is something. And I looked at her and I said, you got to just tell me if it was your cat, what would you do? And she goes, I hate when people ask me that, Paul, but she goes, to be honest, she goes, I would put him to sleep. He's not going to end. So she goes, how do you want to do it? Do you want to come in? We could do it. And I go, she goes, you could stay with him for a little bit. So I go into this room. I don't know if anybody's ever done this before, but you go in a room. And they have like a nice visiting room that you could sit. They say, you spend as much time with the cat as you want. And there's a doorbell. Ring the doorbell when you're ready for the fucking executioner to come in, right? So I go in and he doesn't even want to be held. Like he's, oh, what they first do is they shave like this. I guess you would say his wrist.
Area, yeah.
And they put the catheter in of where things are going to go. And I'm trying to hold him and he wants to retreat. And this is a nice cat. And I know Agar, he's, I saw the look on his face and he was skinny and stuff. And whatever it was, they said it was probably from a cancer that's been there. And I think that's why he was acting weird for 2 months. He would sit with my wife, but something was off. And then he went like under the table in this waiting room thing. And he was just sitting there. And I looked at him and I go, all right. So I ring the bell. She comes in and she goes, all right, this is how it works. She goes, there's three shots. She goes, one shot is going to like relax him. The other shot is going to put him to sleep, but he's alive. And then the third shot is the one that does it. So she's like, what do you want to do? And I go, I don't want to be here for the third shot. I go, can I hold him while you relax him and put him to sleep? And then she goes, that's fine. So I'm holding him. And dude, his head is right here. And I'm literally, his arm is dangling. Oh, dude. And she comes over. She puts it in him and she's going, it's all right. And all of a sudden, as he gets the first one, he kind of goes up and she goes, that's just him feeling it. Then she gives him the other one and he just goes, he's limp and I'm holding him. And the weird thing is when you put an animal to sleep when they're alive, because he's still alive at this point, their eyes are open. Like they don't have eyelids and shit. So like we have eyelids.
Right.
But like imagine if our shit was folded. Like, so they're just, so he's, so, and I'm holding him. And I remember I petted him. I kissed him. I put him on a blanket and he just was like, it was like a stuffed animal. And, I walked out and I couldn't even do the paperwork or take the taxi thing. I just walked out. I left. But the weird thing was there was something amazing that like he lived the life that he lived. Like it was this weird lesson that I never, by the way, I'm done with that. After these other two die, I'm done.
It's too much.
I'm not doing this shit no more. Okay. I'm done. Dude. I'm not
terrible.
Fucking, it's horrible.
It is.
It's terrible. It's like they don't tell you that shit when it's fucking jumping in the window.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you
bouncing,
know,
this
thing's licking and it's frolicking. You see the thing with its tongue out, its fucking eyes rolled back. Like they don't, you know, so that should be in the, like they should talk about that when you get it. Hey, you know, it's going to get real fucked up in 15
ends.
Years, right?
Is that it?
Yeah. But it kind of taught me a lesson that like he lived, like I said, like dude, he would like kill birds and robins and chipmunks. And he was a great cat. And it just let me like, it made life go like, if I could live like that, like if you can get through that, and I know I'm talking about a cat, but it's kind of a lesson that that cat had or that I got from the cat. And it's like, pandemic put me there and going like, you know, life is like, you got to put things into perspective. It was a good reset for a lot of people. And it was because I feel like a lot of people before pandemic, myself included, were on a hamster wheel and we're just doing the same shit and we're just going. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, like you got to put things into perspective and you got to understand and appreciate things. And as, listen, I know that sounds corny and
no,
cliche, but that corny cliche shit comes when it's supposed to.
It does.
You know, and so it was hard, you know, and then right when I'm over it and I almost celebrate it, I'm in the car picking my son up and I get a call and they go, I just want to let you know we have Thomas's ashes whenever you want to. And I'm just going like, bitch, can you deliver it? like it's fucking
they
2 in the afternoon. I mean, it's 2 in the afternoon. I don't need this midday. I don't need this midday. Can you drop the shit off at 2 a.m. when we're sleeping? So
yeah.
I can, like, yeah.
Just slingshot
like,
on the porch.
I want to go get a roast beef sandwich. I'm fucking out thinking of this shit. It comes with like a paw print. It's like, what, they give a picture and shit? What's like a, you know, so, but yeah. So, but it, you know, so, but you know what? We're doing good. Now we know that Stanley, they're real brothers. So Stanley's that age and he's older. He's got diabetes and shit. So it's like, I know what to expect and I know, but in a weird way, it was a lesson because I never dealt with that before. And I kind of got to see that like he was done. He was ready. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was definitely something that was hard to do, but that song coming on in the car gave me something. I don't know where you stand on like signs.
Oh, but big. Dude, I'm big on
dude,
that.
Dude, I'm big Huge. On that too. Like that was not normal. And that song is 2 years old. Like that's not like, cause you know, when you have a hit song, like the new Taylor Swift joint, that's in a rotation of right. 17 songs. So that keeps going. This is out of rotation.
It's down there with and, Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah, this is with the B-52s yeah, and shit. Exactly, yeah. So when that came on, I was like, oh shit, she's going to come out and say that he's done. And I know now, and I'm sitting there, and it was just a really unbelievable experience.
That's great, dude. Look, thank you for coming on and talking about this. Cause what I love about you, like, you're just a
you
dude's
too, man.
Dude. And
you too.
A lot of people have said, like, that this isn't the norm. They like to see guys like us who they consider real guys or whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about this shit. Therapy and battling depression and the mental that fucking torture that's up here. You know, I say all the time, and this is men and women, especially in this fucking city, and even on TV more and more, I'm seeing people put money into their hair and their face and their lips and their cheeks and their asses and stomachs and not a bit of it into mental health.
Yeah, and I look at it like these guys that think it's like too macho. I almost think it's more of a bitch thing to not address it.
Yeah.
It's like, cause you don't want to see the oncoming car, right?
That's
you don't want to see the you don't want to face
keep
what
blindly walking forward.
You just keep
like, whatever.
Yeah. It's like, no, man. Like if you address that and get through it, then you're gonna be, and then you're also gonna be. It's also selfish because you're gonna be better for your kids.
Yeah,
what, you're gonna keep drinking. Think about it. You're going to keep drinking through it. You're going to keep, you know, drowning the pain. You're going to keep being mean to your wife. You're going to keep being an asshole. You're going to keep hiding, like holding this thing in. It's like, no, I want to address it because I want to move on. But I appreciate what you said. And that's why I'm here. Like I said before, you know, as a comic, you come out here and it's like, hey, let's do podcasts. I met you. I wanted to do it. And when people listen to the Verzi Effect or they listen to me and Burr's podcast, like one of the number one compliments I get is, wow, man, you guys just, you know, you're like, anytime you hear the words like real or genuine, dude, like honest dude, like that's all. That's why I'm not here for, like, I don't want to come out here, even though it's part of the business, and get on podcasts just because they're popular. I don't know the people, and it's some Hollywood shit. And I'm just being honest. And if that hurts me or that takes me a little longer, then let it take me longer. But I don't want to sit down with fake shit. And this isn't fake.
No,
this is real.
Valuable, man. Especially when we talk about it. Like, it's funny to me. We were just talking to somebody the other day about if whales have been on, how long have whales been on the earth versus dinosaurs, and they came after dinosaurs, but they've been on the earth for 50 million years.
Wow.
Whale species, 50 million fucking years. And I thought, like, we're talking about the species that's been on this planet for 50 million years, and if someone's lucky, they live a healthy 100 years. I mean, what is 100 years when we're talking about 50? Fuck, it's a sneeze.
It's
nothing.
It's that's why that song "Dust in the Wind," man. We are a little. I don't know if it was Sarah Silverman or somebody's like, we are literally a piece of lint. This is a quick ride. I'll never forget my grandfather, Frank, my father's father, Frank Verzi, rest his soul. He sat down one time on the couch and he just goes, he was in his 70s, and he goes, "Paul, it goes fast." And now I'm sitting here, you know, 42. And, you know, I've definitely accomplished a lot of things, getting a comedy special that did well, doing an album that did well, and working on the next one. And just doing this as a job has been an amazing thing to do. But like, there's other things that I want to do, of course, but to just be here, two kids, healthy, thank God. And you go to yourself like, wow, man, like a decade's going to come quick. Like a decade. I remember my 25th birthday cake, and I remember it said 25. Ryan, that shit felt like 2 weeks ago. So it's like you're right, man, like 50
just million. Last night I sat down and wrote, because you know they always say, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That old bullshit question. And I thought, last night it dawned on me that my daughter's six, and holy shit, it's been 5 years since I've been on my own as a single parent with my daughter sharing custody. And I was like, man, 5 years. And I sat down, I started laundry listing all the shit I've done in 5 years. And I was like, God damn, man, I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah.
The accomplishments I've made personally, the growth I've made personally and professionally. Like, I can't believe all the shit I've done in 5 years. And I'm not – the list isn't even done. There's no. more like teaching and working with nonprofit and giving back and all that shit is.
And the number one thing you do, man, seriously, is like it's like you're a father to your daughter, and like you make that a priority, man. And that's the priority.
Yeah, so I'm telling you, the best credit we'll ever get is dad.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about anything beyond that. Yeah. I really don't. You know, yeah. this. You know, we. Look at Rich. I will never forget Richard Pryor passing away. Arguably the greatest
yeah.
comedian, artist in our genre, right? One of, no doubt. And he got I think someone else died on the same day, and he got this little fucking corner. And it was over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's over. And it's like,
yeah.
We got a business full of fucking pedophiles and freaks and rapists and shit. What do I want your goddamn approval for? I just need it from my kid
yep.
and the people out there. God bless y'all, that Night Pants Nation, that love it. That's it.
Yeah, well, who, you know, I think about this too. He actually lives in my neighborhood. I saw him jogging the other day. But who was in the business for 30 plus years, mega star, and went away, retired? You don't hear about him anymore.
Martin Short.
Nope.
Comedian?
David Letterman.
Yeah.
He did his farewells, fucking did Foo his Fighters.
HBO thing and done.
Foo yeah. Fighters, right? And then nobody even, that catalog That's how of you work. Do it. Think about it. That catalog of work, you know? And he lives in my neighborhood. I see him jogging, his head down, his beard. But like that catalog of work. And when it's over, people go, oh yeah, man, it was a great talk show. And that's it. But
I said Martin Short, by the way, and I meant Rick Moranis. That's who I meant. Rick Moranis bounced to take care of his kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Recently got stabbed or some shit or
but,
something.
But I was going to like with like the credit thing.
Right,
where it's
yeah.
like, it's like, you do that whole body of work, and it's like, that's great. And people know your catalog, and you did some iconic shit. That's great. But at the end of the day, it's like, oh, yeah, man, he lives up there now. I see him jogging all the time.
Yeah,
it's like,
he's the host dad. This TV show.
He's dad. Right. He hosted this TV show. And it just makes you think, it's like, what's important? Because what will never be, you know, I know I won't, is be some 65-year-old single dude living in a, you know, studio apartment wondering about how many spots I got tonight and I don't have to come. I mean, fuck that.
No way. No yeah, way. I didn't want to be that at 50.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, fuck that.
Fuck that, dude. Yeah.
Well, brother, thank you for coming on. Now, something I ask everybody's first time on, advice you'd give to your 16-year-old self. So now knowing what we've talked about here, what would you tell 16-year-old Paul Verzi?
I would tell 16-year-old Paul Verzi, one, no matter how far away it is, like if your mind is to it, like if you keep your mind to it, you will do shit that you don't even think you could ever do. And two, I would say what you think is important isn't. Like what you think matters now.
God, that's great.
Isn't. You think it matters now. Believe me.
It means everything to you right now.
It means everything. It's your whole life right now. It's your whole world. It means dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I found that out, you know, and the reason I would tell my 16-year-old self that is because now I'm going, I would drive from upstate New York away from my children on a Wednesday night. We'd have dinner and I'd have to rush, or I'd miss dinner to go do a $25 spot for a booker that I want to keep booking me on a Wednesday night in the city, an hour away. I'm losing money, and I'd leave these beautiful people here. Mm-hmm. And guess what? If that booker got hit by a bus, I got to find the next motherfucker.
That's right.
So yeah. Imagine what I'm – so I'm leaving my family and all these important things in my life that I'm getting up and leaving. And the pandemic let me know, hey, I wasn't on stage for 5 months. And then I went to Arizona Headline and I was fine.
Yeah.
So perspective. That booker and that approval doesn't matter. That comedian who's mentally ill judging you doesn't matter.
Nope.
You know, and so I would tell my 16-year-old self, stay the course with blinders on about what you want, because the rest is noise. My buddy Andrew Themlis, who produces the Verzi Effect and Anything Better, he goes, those other people are like the people in a video game just walking away, like they're not even, they're walking their shit, but yeah. Like, so, but you don't think that at the time, because when you're 16, oh, I gotta get to that. But when I was 16, I was like, I'm gonna beat that guy's keg stand tonight. I'm gonna do 91 seconds.
Yeah, 91.
You know? Yeah. And I'm going like, what? So I'd be like, that shit's not important. What's important right. is really bettering yourself and not other people's approval. Other people's approval that doesn't matter can dominate us.
Yes.
I've seen some really great comedians that both me and you know, that are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that give a fuck about some irrelevant
something. The guy that's got 17 followers that just shit on whatever they did.
cares.
Yes.
Cares that their whole life is done. And it's like, and you either have a beautiful family at home that you're neglecting because of that, or you don't have any family because you're concentrated on that. So that's what I would tell him. I would tell him like that shit doesn't matter. Focus on you and what's going to better you and make you happy. And everything else is outside noise.
That's great, dude.
Yeah.
Please promote whatever you'd like again.
Yes. Guys, please go to my YouTube channel. My website, paulverzi.com, has all ticket links. I'm going to be, if you guys are in the Boston area, New England area, Connecticut, New York, come out to the Wilbur Theater in Boston. I will be there October 22nd. It's my first theater show. It got postponed twice because of COVID. It was supposed to be in June, then March. It'll be October 22nd. I will be at the Fairfield Community Theater on July 23rd in Fairfield, Connecticut. You can go to that. And I will be shooting my special in September, directed directorial debut by my good friend Pete Davidson. We're going to have a lot of shows leading up to that. Ticket links will be available there. Go to my YouTube channel. Thank you so much for having me, man.
You got it, brother. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.